colleagues. We are on our second day of our session. I'll be suggesting that following the discussion yesterday concerning amendments to the regulations of the JNL Programme Advisory Committees, we had a discussion on that. So Nikolai will introduce the changes which have been discussed over the day, over the night, and we'll have that item following the 1, 2, 3, 4 presentations by young scientists, and then we'll have item number 10 with Nikolai showing us what is the result, final result. And then we continue with the program as usual. If this is accepted by the council, I will then ask Nikita Sidorov to present the multimedia educational resources of this institute. So Nikita, you are there, and the floor is yours. Is Nikita there? Okay. Okay. So please. Please give us our talk. You're most welcome.
Morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, I would like to thank you for the possibility to participate in this great event. This is an honor for me personally, and I would like to present you our work that we are doing with our team, headed with Professor Yuri Panibratsev. And in general, we call it multimedia educational resources, which include some projects such as main facilities exposition, the virtual laboratory of nuclear fission, and NICA open lesson. Let me introduce our first project that we call GNR main facilities. I will say some words and you will see some highlights of the background here. So the main goal of our activity is to attract people to, especially young, talented people, to the GNR achievements and GNR science. But unfortunately, even in our city, Dubna, we have a problem that people don't know what's going on inside the GNR buildings. And sometimes physics is very hard to understand, or sometimes they just don't know how to learn about it. So this is our mission, to fix that problem. And we started this project on March 2015 and wanted to accomplish it till the beginning of the GNR 6th anniversary, and we did it. I must thank our colleagues from laboratories who helped us to do it. We did it right, and exposition includes graphic videos of our main facilities. For example, NICA complex. You can see here U400 cyclotron. Also, we have medical technical complex, I think IBR2. Of course, and Baikal Neutrino Telescope. Of course, it's a little bit simplified vision, but at least we can explain the meaning of the experiments to new people. And after that, they can really understand something or be interested in. Exposition was demonstrated at the GNR anniversary in Dubna, Armenia, Slovakia, Slovakian Technical Museums. Also, it was shown on the main Russian TV channels during the GNR anniversary events. Also, at EXON event in Kazan Federal University, Festival of Science Nol Plus, Science Plus, which was held at Lomonosov State University in Moscow and in the Export Center at the same time. And South Africa, GNR, 10 years of cooperation celebration. And after that, African Science Forum, South Africa. Right now, this exposition is available in the GNR Visit Center, GNR Museum of Science and Technology, also at Academicians Isakyan Center in the University Dubna, at the Congress Hall in the Special Economic Zone Dubna, and the internet version is available at the nsww.org. Also, this exposition is located here on this floor, and in during the coffee break, if you haven't seen it yet, I can show you. Please welcome. Okay, the next one. This project is called Virtual Laboratory of Nuclear Fission, and we make this work with FLORF Laboratory of Nuclear Reactions. We developed the e-learning tool for students, which includes current scientific data into the educational process. This laboratory is based on the real equipment which we have at the university center. And using this tool, students can simulate experiments with their radiation sources and complicated equipment without damaging it and without damaging themselves. But after that, they, of course, can do the real experiment. So it's like the training. And the result of the project is a web source that allows students to make practicums. And we want to integrate this practicum into educational process in the universities of Russia, GNR member states, and Republic of South Africa. And moreover, students can design their own devices and include it into this virtual laboratory library and work with this. And finally, I would like to introduce you our latest project that we did special to the Russian Day of Science on 8th of November, or February, I'm sorry. Now, this educational project we did with academician Grigory Trubnikov, and it is dedicated to the NICA project. We call it NICA Universe in the Lab. This is an open lesson for Russian school children, which we try to do interesting for all ages, because this is some kind of scientific public movie. And here we talk about the role of science in our life, how our universe was created, and about phase transitions of matter in quark, gluon, plasma, and so on. We explain why do we build these accelerators, colliders, what we can do with them. And demonstrate some videos of NICA complex, as you see. Some parts that already accomplished we can demonstrate with videos. The other parts we do with 3D modeling. Tell what heavy ions can be used for the in the material sciences, radio biology, and medicine, and how accelerator experiments can prepare astronauts and their spaceships into the long journeys in space, and so on. As a result, we want to train specialists, of course, to work at NICA complex in the midterm and long-term perspective, and the lesson was recommended in the Russian, all Russian schools by the Russian government, and it is located on the NICA web page. So you can see the web page address here, and right now we have already 11,000 visitors during this month. Mostly these are teachers who came to download this lesson. And from, I think, 50 Russian regions, and from 60 countries already. And the count is still increasing. So, I must notice that this movie is in Russian language right now, but we are working, and the English version will be ready in March. And I think you will be able to know about it, about this event, we will post, I think, on the GNR webpage the news about it, and maybe you will have the possibility to show it to your children or grandchildren, and they will say, oh, I understand what are you doing at there, GNR, maybe. I hope so. Okay, that's all for now. Thank you for your attention. Please, I invite you to see the TVs during the coffee break. I can show you more, or we can talk there. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for this very beautiful presentation. Do we have any questions or comments?
I'm sorry, but it seems to me that when you made the list of particles, you forgot the Higgs particle.
Maybe.
Okay, further comments? Okay.
You showed in the beginning a lot of stuff in English language, and since Germany is an associated member state, this would be interesting for us. So that material is really readily available in English, not in Cyrillic lettering? Because Trubnikov's part, by the way, congratulations, beautiful actor, Mr. Trubnikov, but this was in Russian, we saw yesterday. But the beginning you showed, this was all in English.
Yes. I've been talking only about the Nika open lesson. Mm-hmm.
So, right, so this is all in English?
Yes,
so it can be used also in Germany?
Yes. We did especially for the GNR 6th anniversary, of course, not only in Russia. And we've been in Slovakia, Armenia, of course.
Thank you.
Sorry, I may be monotonous, but in addition to your superstar, Dubnikov, why not inserting a lady from time to time in your
movie? I agree with that.
Further questions or comments? Let me make one. It's clearly with the Russian text, which are obviously intended for the Russian audience, it seems that the parallel effort in making all this in English would promote the Joint Institute very, very effectively. The graphics are beautiful and presented. I would say that maybe it's worth putting an effort into translating the lectures of simply to have all that in English and promote it as the Joint Institute's work. Thank you. Well, anyway, thank you for this very, very nice presentation. We have one more question there.
Only very short. Thank you very much for the presentation, and thank you for your activity in this field. I think that it really is not only interesting, but very important. On the other side, I think that it is oriented not for specialists in particle physics or in nuclear physics. It is for the general public. I would like to ask how it is arranged in your arrangement that it will be understandable for the public, because specialists very easily use a very special vocabulary and very special grammar and very special expressions, and it is not very understandable for the general public. Do you have some control for testing and for understanding for the general public?
Yes, but the first step we begin is for the mass public, and then we try to extend it to the, for example, massive online courses, and make more, more extended with more information for the students. Yes, of course. We make these expositions, first of all. We see the feedback from there, from the kids and their parents. We have students on our practicums. For example, this virtual laboratory of nuclear fission, they have these South African students that came here and been doing all this work. Unfortunately, Yuri Ponibratsov previously had his presentation with all these photos. I just try to show it what is inside our applications. So of course we have feedback from working with it.
Thank you once again for this fine presentation, and I would part with the final comment that maybe we should persuade Grigory to give that talk in English, and then that would be probably a world hit, in my view. So I would wonder whether you should not concentrate on this and try to get what Grigory said in Russian to say that in English and present it as the lectures of Trubnikov, which will probably have the same, well, I mean, they can reach the same audience as the Feynman lectures. I think it's just good stuff. Thank you very much, and we go on to the next presentation.
Sorry.
Any comments there?
In addition.
Yeah, yeah.
There is a copyright on this movie, or in addition of what you said, we can download this movie and add, for instance, a title in Italian, German, and so on?
That's a question, I think, to Director Matveev, yeah, because I would imagine that copyright on this should be with the Joint Institute, but that's my view,
but
personally.
It would be available in a way.
So I think we will try to do that. So.
Probably we write an email to ask the permission to... Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you once again. And our next presentation is from Andrei Gridin. That's the Jelepov Laboratory of Nuclear Physics, Charmonium-like states at Compass. So now we go between CERN and Dubna. Okay, please give your talk now.
Okay. Hello, dear colleagues. My talk is dedicated to photoproduction of charmonium-like states at the Compass experiment. As we know, in 1964, Gell-Mann and Zweig proposed a quark model which says that all the hadrons are consist of quarks, and there are two groups of hadrons. First group is baryons. These particles have three quarks. And the second group are mesons, which have two quarks. But the quark model doesn't exclude the existence of more complex states, like hybrids and multi-quark states. Moreover, such states were proposed by Gell-Mann and Zweig, in their works. After more than 50 years of the quark model, we still don't clearly see such complex states clearly in experiments. In the late of 90s and in the middle of 2000s, several groups reported about observations of pentaquark states with statistical significance more than 5 sigma. Unfortunately, more precise experiments like CLASS, Bell, Babar, and Compass didn't confirm these observations. The second wave of reports started in 2003 with observation of X3872 by the Bell experiment. Now such states are observed by a lot of precise experiments. These states are connected with heavy quarks and called XYZ states. For example, one more interesting state is that C3900. This state is a candidate to tetraquarks because it has charge and decays to Jepsi and Pion. The wave of XYZ states has long and rich history. I can highlight the most important observations. So in 2003, the Bell experiment observed X3872, and this observation started this topic. Next, Bell observed charged B states. These states have B bar quarks, but ammonium-like physics is also possible, but during my talk I only will say about charmonium-like states. Next, this free collaboration found charged charmonium-like states, and recently LHCb collaboration reported about observation of charmonium-like pentaquarks. On the left table you can see charmonium spectrum. states described by the standard model shown in yellow, predicted by a theory and undiscovered states are gray, neutral XYZ states are red, and charged XYZ states are shown in purple. Which production mechanisms of Charmonium-like states exist? Charmonium-like states are observed in direct production in E plus E minus collisions, in direct production in Hadron collisions, in the case of B meson, and collisions of virtual photons. But the listed here experiments haven't searched Charmonium-like states in photoproduction. While this way of production was proposed in the middle of 2000 after observation of X8872. Recently, COMPASS had several attempts to observe Charmonium-like states in this way of production. The COMPASS is a fixed target experiment which is located at superproton synchrotron at CERN. The COMPASS collaboration consists of about 200 physicists from 13 countries. COMPASS is a universal spectrometer which covers wide range of energies and emission angles of particles. And COMPASS uses muon and hadron beams with energy from 160 GeV up to 200 GeV and use different targets. COMPASS studies nucleon spin structure and light hadron spectroscopy, but the collected data allow to study photoproduction of XYZ states. What is a photoproduction mechanism? COMPASS is not the one experiment which can study photoproduction. Other experiments use photon beam to do it, while COMPASS can produce virtual photons which interacts with the target, so XYZ state could be produced. And the produced state decays to gypsy and other particles, and the final state, except of the recoil nucleon, could be detected by COMPASS. COMPASS collects the data since 2002, and for now it has statistics about 50,000 gypsy bond via photoproduction. Also, it is important to note that this topic, photoproduction of Charmonium-like states, was introduced to COMPASS by GNR group, and our group plays the leading role in these observations. So the first attempt was observation of photoproduction of ZC3900. About this state, we know that this state is near DD star threshold and could be the best example of Charmonium-like states, because this state has charge and decays to gypsy and pion. So the most suitable explanation of the nature of the Z is that it is a tetraquark state. But of course, other explanations exist. So COMPASS tried to observe photoproduction of ZC3900, assumed its decay to gypsy and pion. Of course, theoretical models of photoproduction of the state exist, and the second plot shows a theoretical cross-section for this process. You can see that COMPASS covers wide range of theoretical cross-section, so COMPASS could see some signal. Unfortunately, in the spectral mass of gypsy and pion, there is no any statistically significant signal from ZC, so the result of this work was model-independent estimation for the upper limit of cross-section and partial width estimation for the model. The obtained result published and recently referenced in PDG. The same analysis for ZC4200 was performed for the COMPASS collaboration, and the result upper limit for the cross-section was obtained. The second attempt is for the production of X3872. This state is also interesting. It is narrow and also is near DD star threshold. The decay to DD star is the most probable. Also, you can see that the probability to decay to Gypsy and 2 pions and to Gypsy and Omega is almost the same, so there is violation of the parity. A lot of theoretical models have been developed, and now the most suitable one is that X3872 has CC bar core and is a hybrid of several states. Also, this is a large structure. Its size is about 7 femtometers. COMPASS tried to observe photoproduction of X3872 with Gypsy and 3 pions in final state. In the spectrum mass of Gypsy and 2 pions, you can see two peaks. The first peak is the peak of Psi prime, has statistical significance more than 5 sigma. And the second peak is possible X3872 with statistical significance more than 4 sigma. The obtained from the pit mass of X3872 is in a good agreement with nominal mass. So X3872 could be the first charmonium-like state which seen in photoproduction. There are a lot of possible other photoproduction channels which COMPASS can study. There are just some examples of them. So BS3 collaboration sees some signal in Gypsy ETA channel. A lot of experiments see X4140 and 4274 in Gypsy Phi channel. And Bell and Babar observed Y3940 state in Gypsy Omega channel. In 2016 and 2017, COMPASS setup has several new features. It uses liquid hydrogen target, so it is possible to detect photons. Next, the system of three colorimeters could be used for better selection of exclusive events, and detector camera could detect recoil protons and recoil nucleons. Also, COMPASS use another set of triggers, so wider kinematic range could be covered. One more interesting task is photoproduction of charmonium-like pentaquarks in S-channel, recently found by LHCb collaboration. But for this observation, COMPASS needs extended kinematic range, and we hope that COMPASS will cover the needed kinematic range because of new triggers in future data. To conclude, charmonium-like states is important for understanding of properties of hadronic matter topic to study, and photoproduction is a new and interesting mechanism which COMPASS can study, and COMPASS performs such studies using collected data and has several results. So COMPASS has published results about photoproduction of ZC3900. The paper about photoproduction of X3872 is under preparation, and analysis in Gypsy Phi channel is ongoing. Also, COMPASS will collect new data with improved setup. And I will mention that this topic was introduced to COMPASS by GNR group, which plays a leading role in these observations. So that's all, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for this exciting talk. Questions? Okay, go ahead.
I'd like to inquire about your transparency 12. You have, in the first peak, you have several bins where you have observed a Psi-2S, but the chi, I only see two bins which are really more than a sigma away, and you still claim you have almost five sigma. I don't get that point. But of course, you guys know what you are doing. I was just wondering, because it's only two bins where you are away from the background, more than one sigma. Let me also ask, while you think, did you really make a serious point about that you believe that this is a 10 Fermi object which you have observed? 10 Fermi for a 3 GeV particle?
The size of XTN72 is, I said, 7 femtometers. It is a theoretical estimation, as I know. As for the results listed here, it is preliminary. It's just preliminary results. So more details in a published article.
Okay, go ahead.
How long they live? Are they short-lived or the long life and the charmoniums?
These states are short-lived because. Because they have quite, let's say, not simple structure and decays.
Questions? Comments? Thank you once again for this very fine presentation. I see no comments. Okay, before we go to the next talk, which will be given by Vladimir Vachkov, I'll make a short announcement. We decided that we should postpone the discussion on the regulations to after the coffee break. It'll precede the general discussion, because I think that way we are able to enjoy our talks better rather than read this. So item number 10 is now moved just prior to general discussion after the coffee break. Okay, if that's okay with you. Thank you. So now Vladimir Rachkov will give us a talk on fusion reactions with light neutron-rich nuclei, a pathway to synthesize new heavy nuclei. And Vladimir, this is yours. Okay, go ahead.
Good morning. The title of my presentation, Fusion Reactions with Light Stable and Neutron-Rich Nuclei, Pathway to Synthesis of New Heavy Nuclei. I have divided my presentation into three parts. First of all, I would like to talk about motivation. Then, let us briefly discuss the theoretical approach. And finally, I would like to say a few words about result and conclusions. In the slide, we can see the top part of the nuclear map. And we can see that four elements... four elements with Z more than 100. Only neutron deficit isotopes have been synthesized. But the region with neutron-enriched isotopes is not investigated. The knowledge about these isotopes are very important for understanding astrophysical nucleogenesis, processes for astrophysical nucleogenesis. The isotopes from this region can be produced in fusion reactions with light stable or reactive projectiles, such as neon-22, neon-23, oxygen-20, with actinide targets, and the evaporation of some particles from compound nucleus. I would like to note that the experiments to study fusion reactions such as neon-22 plus actinium targets can be carried out in the super heavy element factory in FLIRF laboratory. To study of this type of reactions are very important because we need to have some experience to registration of PXN and alpha XN channels. This mechanism of reactions can be used for synthesis of new super heavy neutron enriched isotopes. For example, neutron enriched isotopes of moscovium can be produced in these reactions, which was proposed by Professor Bensin. Synthesis of super heavy nuclei in fusion reactions can be decomposed on the three reaction stage. In the first reaction stage, two colliding nuclei overcome Coulomb barrier and come into contact. The name of this process is capture cross section, and we can write in this part of this formula. But at the second reaction stage, a compound nuclei is formed. Of course, this system may be split out two fragments before compound nuclei is formed. It means that our capture cross section we need to multiply by compound nuclear formation probabilities. If a compound nuclei is formed, its nuclei has some excitation energies. There are several ways to the excitation of compound nucleus. On the one hand, this fission process and another one, excited compound nuclei has to evaporate some particles and emit gamma rays. And finally, we have our formula multiplied by survival probability, and we have a relation for cross-section of superheavy production in fusion reactions with the emission of particles. Now I would like to talk about the first reaction stage. This is a capture cross-section. The capture cross-section can be calculated within quantum or empirical coupled channel model, but in our work we use quantum coupled channel model. And in our calculation we take into account only collective degrees of freedom. This is a schematical picture, two deformed nuclei rotating in a reaction plane. And the potential energy for the system we can write as sum of Coulomb and nuclear forces. We can see that potential energy is a function of several variables. The view of this function we can see in this picture. Okay, for our system, we can have the same Hamiltonian, and we solve the Schrödinger equation, where the total wave function can be decomposed over the partial waves. After we have a set of couple equations, this couple of differential systems for real wave functions, which boundary conditions, this system can be numerically calculated. More information we can find in these papers. Finally, our capture cross-section can be calculated using this formula. But the next stage, reaction stage, is probability of a compound nuclear formation. In the fusion of rather light projectiles with heavy targets, the compound nuclei is formed rather away after colliding nuclei come into contact. It means that the probability of compound nuclear formation equals 1. With the increase in the masses of fusing nuclei, the quasi-fission process starts to play and more significant role play these processes. It means that the probability of compound nuclear formation this unit. In this case, we can use the phenomenological relation was proposed by Professor Zagrebaev and Greiner in this paper. But in our case, we discuss a light projectile and actinic targets. But in our calculation, we use probability of compound nuclear formation equals 1. The last reaction stage, this is the decay of excited nuclei. For a calculation of survival probability, we use a statistical model. There are two methods. The first method is method Monte Carlo, and the second multifold integration methods. But in our work, we use multifold integration methods because it's the calculation is not very long for time. Okay, but I would like to say that for the first time it becomes possible to study complicated nuclear dynamics just in the internet. But this is a link of our resources and a few words about what is NRV project. The NRV Web Knowledge Base is a unique interactive research system which allows to run complicated computational codes. The system works in any internet browser supporting Java. The system has a graphical interface for preparation of input parameters and analysis of output results. But now I would like to say about our result. But and first, we compare our calculation with experiments. In this picture, we can see the cross section for reaction oxygen 18 plus curium 248. The symbol, this experimental data taken from this paper, and curve, this is our calculation. But we can see that our calculation has a good agreement with experimental data. The same result we have for another combination, neon 22 plus platinum. Here we can see 5N, 7N, P6N, and P5N channels, evaporation channels, and symbols, this is experimental data from this paper, and here is our calculation. We can see that the calculation reproduces the general future of experimental data reasonably well. But the next, we would like to say about mechanism of reaction. And compare of PXN and NPXN channels. This calculation for cross-section of evaporation channels 1P3N and NP2N channels, and here we can see that cross-section is, in the first case, the charged particles evaporated first, and we can see the cross-section is larger when the charged particles is evaporated first, then when it's preceded by neutrons evaporations. our work, we study the fusion reactions with light projectiles, such as neon 22, neon 23 plus oxygen 20, with actinide targets. This is actinide targets. This combination were chosen for which were evaporation cross-section more than 1 picobar. Here we can see our calculation results. And the next slide, I'll show more details, information. Here we have 11 new isotopes. Can be produced in these reactions and in these channels. And the last column, this is evaporation cross-section, maximum evaporation cross-section in picobar. Okay, conclusion. Fusion reactions of light ions with actinic targets can be used for synthesis of new neutron-enriched isotopes of transferrium elements with Z more than 102 to 107. These fusion reactions were studied in this work with NRV knowledge base And it was found that 11 new isotopes can be produced in these reactions in XN, PXN, and alpha XN channels with the cross sections ranging from 10 picobar to 10 to 5 picobar. This result may be useful for planning and data analysis of corresponding experiments. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Paper's open for questions and comments. Anybody? Okay. Start over there.
About the transfer reactions. Okay, could you apply your method also on transfer reactions? Like uranium on uranium, and you transfer something like a mass 30 or so object. Can you use this method also for that?
Yes, but this is only one way to synthesize these elements from this region, because here we use the light projectile because we want to go in this region, but and we have actinic targets, but when we I use transfer reactions, multi-transfer reactions, but I think it can be another way to synthesis nuclei.
In many modern theoretical calculations, there are also error bars which are estimated on the theoretical calculations,
yes.
Playing very careful a game with the parameters and trying to estimate what are the error bars. Did you try to do that? Because you have these cross sections in the last table with extreme precision. I guess the error bars are much bigger.
The parameters was chosen corresponding to describe available experimental data, and then we can take some predictions. You can do some predictions. Estimates.
Yeah, it might be probably yeah, factor of 5 or 10 in some cases. Yeah.
It would have to be a fuzzy line, yeah? I mean, it'd have to be.
This result can be depends on the fission barrier, but fission barrier we take as liquid rock fission barrier plus Pravka. Shell correction.
Christoph? Yes, what's the next question?
My question is very similar to Marek's. So in order to run your calculations, you need a set of input parameters to your coupled channel calculations, for example.
Mm-hmm.
How your result depend on these input parameters? So this will show your theoretical error bars.
In the first stage, when we calculate, for example, fusion capture cross-section, we use properties of nuclei, collided nuclei, such as surface vibration and rotation nuclei. But the potential we choose the Wood-Saxon potential with acute winter parameterization. And
but if you change this parameterization, you use another optical potential, what will happen?
We know that we can choose different parameters in our potential, but the fusion barrier can be similar. There are a lot of sets of parameters.
To question Marek and another, The main parameter really is the fission barrier, not fusion, fission barrier. A different prediction for fission barrier in this region of nuclei differ approximately from up to 3 MeV. For example, Peter Müller from Los Alamos, or Adam Sobieszewski in Poland, and other, some groups using the relativistic mean field in Germany, difference very high. 1 MeV in fission barrier, it means your prediction, one order of magnitude mistake or error, like Marek asked. If the 3 MeV, you use another barrier on 3 MeV, it means that 3 order of magnitude, your prediction was not correct.
Any other comments? My final comment after this very fine paper is that whenever I see more parameters than data points, I get nervous. Thank you very much for your presentation. Thank you very much once again. And now we have, after the another fine presentation, I'm sure, simulation of radiation damage to different neuronal structures with GN4 DNA toolkit. This is a very fashionable subject these days. So this will be presented by Lagva Bajarczymek. I'm sorry if I don't pronounce the name correctly. And that's the radiobiological laboratory. So Lagva, please give us a talk.
Good morning, dear members of scientific councils. The topic of my report is a simulation of radiation damage to different neuronal structures with GN4 DNA toolkit. This study refers to problem of radiation damage to central nervous system. It is very important because increasing use coronary radiation therapy. Parts of brain cancers is exposed by radiation. Second one is space radiobiology, which is galactocosmic ray exposures to astronauts during space travel. The radiation damage to central nervous system may lead to changes in neurological disorder and behaviors. Recent experiments with exposures of rodents to heavy ion beams revealed prolonged deficit in learning and memory and neurochemical alterations in brain structures and impairments in apparent response and electrophysiological alterations in the hippocampus and so on. These effects are mainly observed after exposures to heavy ions. Since the particle traversals to the neurons are the initial events of radiation damage to central nervous system, this is very important because neural cells are a very complicated structure and it is very difficult to measure physical and chemical stages of radiation damage to central nervous system. This work is focused on development of computation method which describing the basic mechanisms of central nervous system disorders induced by ionizing radiation with different qualities at the cellular and molecular levels. Recent radiobiological studies are more using Monte Carlo methods and, for example, GN4 DNA, which can simulate interactions of radiation with biological systems at the cellular and the DNA levels. We are used for this computation GN4 DNA extension of GN4 Monte Carlo codes for modeling of radiation physical and chemical forces on the nanoscale. This time stages of radiation action is continued from attosecond to nanosecond to microseconds. Gen 4 code is implemented in C++ programming language, and it's user-friendly and possible to develop new applications. And the whole models of Gen 4 DNA process based on numerous experimental data. In our studies, geometrical model of single neuron in Gen 4 is based on experimental data, and data are obtained from available microscopy image, and after that we are using tracing softwares, and typically neuron is composed of some soma and dendritic trees and axons. In our study, we are constructed a single pyramidal neuron, dendritic trees are represented by a small cylindrical compartment. Here is a blue color, and soma is represented by a small spare compartment, which is here blue green color. In this pyramidal neuron is included 2,563 cylindrical compartment and 11 spherical compartments. This is our simulation environment. Here is a single pyramidal neuron in the Gent DNA environment, and it is our neuron model, and here is a carbon particle tracks. This tool is able to calculate energy deposition and free radicals in our models. Here we can see our general scheme of simulation approach. And first, we load CVC or PDP file. After that, we use the nearest neighbor algorithm, and then we build Gen 4 geometry, and then checking our lab, and after that we will obtain energy deposition and free radicals in our target volume. For the simulation, we are using Hyperlit cluster computing, and it is based on LIT designer for built three-dimensional neural geometry and track structure simulation. And let me introduce some results. We have obtained the first energy deposition in a single pyramidal neuron. Here we can see first carbon particle track and with 500 mM nucleon kinetic energies, and the second one is iron particle track. Here is 1,000 mM nucleon kinetic energies, and here all the energy deposition are indicated as a color mapping and expressed in electron volt. Here we can see iron particle track is more colorful and more colorful. It means iron particle track is more energy deposited. In the basis, we are calculated specific energy spectra in that single pyramidal neuron. Here, first one is for carbon ions with different kinetic energies and with different doses. Here, a shift of maximum of frequency is observed at 2 gray, and for iron ions, is maximum of frequency is observed at 1 gray. Many percent of radiation damage is induced by indirect effects, such as free radicals. That free radicals are produced oxidative stress. That oxidative stress is directly connected to Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and other neurodegenerative disease. In this calculation, we are calculated free radical in single pyramidal neuron with different times and with different particles. Here, first upper three peak course is 30 mev proton particle track, and lower three peak course is 1,000 mev nucleon iron particle tracks. Here, first is picosecond. That one is at nanosecond. That is microsecond. Here, all dots are indicated different free radicals, and For example, red dots are solvated electron, and pink dots are hydroxyl radical, and brown dots are hydrogen peroxide. Here we can see iron particle track is more broader and more densely than proton tracks, and in that basis we are calculated the number of pre-radicals in that single pyramidal neuron, and here also all lines are indicated that pre-radicals. For example, red lines are solvated electron, and beginning of the chemical stage, solvated electron of iron particle is 56 times higher than protons, and end of the chemical stage, 19 times higher than protons. After that, our method are extended. We have constructed a small neural network. It is composed of 10 neural cells, and here in this model has included 96 spherical compartments and 80,082 small cylindrical compartments. Here red lines are iron particle tracks, several particle tracks, and red blue and greens are our spheres and cylindrical compartments. In this basis, we are calculated also dose deposition in small neural network, and here we can see balloon's dose is increasing when total dose deposition is also increasing. And we have also observed interesting irregularity. Here is 0.1 and 1.5 dose when similar irregularity, and 0.5 and 1 gray dots is also similar irregularity. For example, we can see 0.5 and 1 gray dots is the maximum of total dose deposition is 11.2 MeV nucleon, and the minimum is 300 MeV nucleon carbon ions. After that, we are calculated interesting calculation. It is a probability of particle track traversal to neural network, and here first we can see total particle targeting probability dependence on linear energy transfer, and that total particle targeting probability is composed primary particle and secondary electron interactions. Second one is only electron interactions, but both case shape was similar, and linear energy transfer is increasing when also total particle targeting probability is until 150 micrometer increasing, and then after that they are reaches to lower values. We have calculated not only neuron, also we have calculated synaptic receptors, and these synaptic receptors are very thin structure of brain, and that synaptic receptors is pass signals to other neurons. We have here calculated in that synaptic receptors, and that is track structure of 100 MeV nucleon iron particle tracks in synaptic receptors, and we have also calculated the average values of energy deposition to NMDA and MMPA receptor with different particles and same kinetic energies. Here we can see also iron particles is more energy depositions. And after that, I would like conclude. And here we have calculated the microscopic energy deposition in free radicals in a single pyramidal neuron and small neuronal network and synaptic receptors with different particles and different kinetic energies. And some of obtained data cannot be measured experimentally in real neurons. Therefore, that data are of particular importance for understanding physical chemical events and functional changes in central nervous system. Recently, we have developed a new example of new sample on that based on that simulation to be officially included in Gen4DNA. And our some results published at the international journals, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. The paper is now open for comments and questions. Anybody? Okay, please.
I have a question. There is some specific advantage to use Zeant 4 instead of a specific tool like Fluca used for hadron therapy, for instance, which is...
Please, again.
Which is the advantage to use Zeant 4 instead of Fluca, for instance? Fluca is a specific tool used, as far as I know, in hadron therapy, for instance, for...
We are using the Gen4DNA extension only.
Fluca is part in
Fluca
the Gen4.
Is different.
But they can do much more microscopic, almost molecule by molecule simulation.
Yes, Fluca is very...
Maybe it's too microscopic for such an application.
Yeah, so Fluca gives the integral dose instead of...
May I ask you a question? In some of your results, you are comparing effects induced by protons with 30 MeV energy and heavy ions like iron with 1 GeV energy.
Yeah.
This agent, proton 30 MeV, where does it come from in reality? So for iron, I understand, it's GCR, galactic cosmic rays. And these 30 MeV protons in space are from what? From sun?
Yes.
So it's equivalent of sun radiation. Yes?
Yes.
Thank you.
I would argue that 30 MeV protons from the sun are rather unlikely. It's more like 3 GeV protons. So that would be my comment to that.
From sun, less than 100 MeV.
Yeah.
Okay. But less than 100
MeV. It wouldn't really matter whether they are over 100 MeV or 1,000 MeV biologically. It wouldn't make any difference in my view. The difference is in fluence per dose. That is dose per fluence, but otherwise there would have been biologically, for protons above 100 MeV, there would be not much biological difference between the effect of a 100 MeV proton and maybe a 200 MeV proton. So, I mean, that would be my comment. But I have several questions, actually, to this paper. One is that your result will critically depend on what you choose as the size of your target. Mm-hmm. So you have to have some kind of a biological justification for choosing that size of a target, right? Mm-hmm. Secondly, the issue is... what do you, because then that would also determine what you call targeting probability, which is like a cross section, right? Probably. So it's probably based on fluids, which is the right way to do it. But your result appears to indicate you'd have an RB larger than one. Mm-hmm. But the question is, what is your endpoint? And then there are definitions of your targeting probability is somehow related to the expected end biological endpoint. And that, again, is to me unclear. So, say, doing a calculation is one thing, but then how are you expecting to exploit that calculation in terms of understanding the biology or the effects of neuron damage by high LET radiation? That is, what is the expected continuation, or what are you doing this calculation for? I respect the enormous work that's been done, but I'm wondering, you know, in the overall plan, you get your microsymmetric distributions. Okay, well, those will critically, again, depend. If you change the size of the target, your microdosimetry will change. But whether you do it on a very complicated neuron network or whether you do it with a simple one one volume, the average result is going to be much the same. It's hardly worth the effort in doing this very complex calculation. So I was wondering, you know, in what way are you using to your advantage the geometry of the neuron structure in terms of the expected biological outcome of this calculation, some kind of a prediction?
Yes.
Maybe I would add a couple of words concerning the answer to this question. As for the expected biological outcome and how to exploit this result, the most important advantage of this calculation is that can give us information about how many, for example, free radicals are collected within the neuron structure. It is very important in this extent that these free radicals are considered to be one of the major reason for radiation damage to the neural cells at first. And to explain the biological effects that we observe in experiments, it is quite important to know first the accumulation of these free radicals by very complicated neuron structure. This was the reason for doing this calculation. Okay.
But then you'd be assuming there'd be no repair in neural cells, which is a logical assumption, right? So you'd have no. You're not. The calculation assumes no repair of this damage.
Because experimentally it is practically impossible at present to measure precisely the yields of these kind of free radicals in the neural cells. We can measure it on the tissue or et cetera, et cetera. But to know, let's say, a more thin effects, elementary effects, we need to know a more detailed information about this distribution which each neuronal cell. This is an important advantage of this calculation. You know?
I think we'll enjoy our discussion around coffee time to discuss these issues further.
Okay.
But thank you for this very nice presentation once again. And now I give the floor to our director, who is now taking over this part of the meeting.
Dear colleagues, I have made three statements. First, upon proposal by GINR Directorate, which was unanimously supported at last session, the title Honorary Doctor of GINR has been conferred on Professor Frederick Didek in recognition of outstanding contribution to the advancement of science and the education of the young scientists. So it's my great pleasure now to invite Professor Frederick Didek to receive this diploma.
Уважаемый Виктор Анатольевич, уважаемые дамы и господа, уважаемые друзья, я глубоко признателен за вручение мне диплома почетного доктора Объединенного института ядерных исследований. Please bear with me for a few words in English. I consider this award not only as a recognition of scientific excellence, especially since I do not feel and never felt that my scientific achievements and efforts to advance science are superior to those of many others. I consider it also, and perhaps even primarily, as a symbol of a clear commitment both of the Joint Institute of Nuclear Research and of myself to the eternal values of humanism that are enshrined in scientific work, irrespective of national borders and political differences. I had the privilege and the pleasure to be one of the few foreign members of the Scientific Council that were appointed by the then director, Vladimir Kardashevsky, from countries that were not member states of the Joint Institute. That was in 1992, a novel and bold step of the directorate, designed to underline the Joint Institute's commitment to borderless internationalism at a time when the Joint Institute faced a number of difficulties and when there was some debate about its future orientation. With time, this commitment proved successful, and now, 25 years later, we can all be proud of a strong Joint Institute that is recognized and appreciated by research institutions all over the world. Уважаемые дамы и господа, я желаю Объединенному институту ядерных исследований и особенно сотрудникам института, многие из которых стали для меня друзьями, всего самого наилучшего в будущем. Большое спасибо.
I'll be expressing the feelings of the committee in congratulating you very warmly on this occasion. And I think we need to...
Our second announcement. Upon proposal by GINR Directorate, anonymously supported by Scientific Council at its previous session, the Venedikt Zhilepov Prize has been awarded to Professor Yulian Budagov for the development and construction of unique laser metrology system for measurement of angular oscillations of the Earth's surface, or inclinometer, as was shown during the Directorate report at this session. So I have a pleasure to invite Yulian Budagov to receive.
In the late autumn of 1993, many of us were kicked out of Waxahachie in Texas and landed here because Supercollider was closed then. Practically immediately, I was invited by Nikolai Rusakovich to join ATLAS activity, and all the time, practically 22 years, we spent with ATLAS. We were very friendly accepted by Peter Yeni and contributed noticeably with high precision laser metrology. But the reason I'm here today and now is that we have produced very interesting instrument which is able to measure the ground oscillation, ground motion, with about nanoradian precision. It looked maybe 5 or 6 sigma aside of particle physics, but now it becomes clear that this is essential instrument, probably, it's understood, I think, for the high luminosity program of the Large Hadron Collider, to say nothing on the FCC. I thank this audience, highly respectable council, for the recognition of the work of my team, which is small. This is Mikhail Lyablin, mainly Nikolai Zaryan and me partly. And I would like to thank Viktor Anatolievich and Vadim Alexandrovich for very positive support of this work. But especially, I would like to express my gratitude to Peter Yeni, who noticed at the very early stages the usefulness of this work. So, and this is the reason probably I'm here. Thank you, everybody, and good luck to our institute. Thanks much.
Dear colleagues, now about jury's recommendations on the award of the Bruno Pantekorova Prize. Please show these slides. The international jury of this prize composed of the following members. So Samuel Bilinki from GNR, Luciano Magliani from Italy, Artur MacDonald, Canada, Alexander Reshevsky from GNR in chairman, and Yoshira Suzuki, Japan. I would like to say that all members of those jury very actively discussed who will won this very prestigious Bruno Pantekorova Prize. And next, please. So, the jury has resolved on the award Bruno Pantekorova Prize to a group of authors, including Professor Yifan Wang from IFB Beijing, China, Professor Hu Bong Kim from Seoul National University in South Korea, and Koishira Nishikawa from Keck, Tsukuba, Japan, for their outstanding contributions to the study of the neutrino oscillation phenomenon and the measurement of theta 1-3 mixing angle in the Dea Bay, Renault, and T2K experiments. So this is very, maybe unusual, not rare, but very fair decision made by that jury, and I ask Scientific Council to approve, support this recommendations by the jury. So please. Thank you for your support. So that at the next session in September next year, we will have a pleasure to deliver diploma of this prize to our authors of this prize and to maybe to listen their speeches on that. So thank you.
We now have Professor Itkis announce the vacant. Jury's recommendations on the award of annual prizes. Lisa, the floor is yours.
So, I propose the jury's recommendation on the award of our Institute annual prizes for best papers in the field of scientific research, instruments and methods, and applied research. Here shown jury Арбузов, Глаголев, Иткис, Изосимов, Кучерка, Лычагин, Альшевский, Теряев, Ценов. I must to explain you that for each awarded work was two referee, one internal referee, another one outside of Joint Institute from not only member states, from another states. So, common work, theoretical physics 3, experimental physics 5, instrument methods 2, applied physics 3 works. First prize in field of theoretical physics, cluster approach for describing nuclear fission. Authors: Paska, Adamian, Andreev, Antoninko, Jolas, Nazirov, Scheidman. Second prize, conformal anomalies, quantum entanglement, boundaries, and distributional geometry, also Dmitry Fursaev. Another second prize, is it possible to discover a dark matter particle with accelerator? It's a review, also Vadim Bedniakov. In field of experimental physics,
First prize, magnetic phenomena in intermetallic compounds, studies of the limits of the itinerant electron metamagnetism concept. Authors, Kozlenko, Lukin, Kichanov, Rutskauskas, Savenko, Bursow, Vlaik, Dang, Ngon, Tuan. Another first prize, investigation of spontaneous fission properties of short-lived isotopes of transfermium elements, the authors Svirikhin, Yeryomin, Popeka, Malyshev, Chepigin, Isaev, Chernakov, Sokol, Andreev, Popov. Second prize in field of experimental physics, investigation of hadronic hadrogen-like atoms in the Dirac experiment. Also, Afanasyev, Gorchakov, Karitsai, Zabitsky, Kruglov, Kruglova, Kulikov, Lednitsky, Nemyonov, Nikitin. In field of instruments and methods, first prize, investigation of exotic radioactive decay using the vertex method, project expert, authors, Besbach, Gorshkov, Grigorenko, Kaminsky, Krupko, Mucha, Fötzner, Slepnev, Fomichev, Hudoba. Second prize, construction and commission of the heavy and linear accelerator for Nika injection complex, authors, Butenko, Govorov, Donets, Gobets, Lefterov, Manchinsky, Sidorin, Ratzinger, Trubnikov, Hölterman. In field of applied research, first prize, reduction of radiation damage in biological object by means of laser radiation. Osos, Vaskanyan, Mitsin, Gaevsky. Second prize, neutron activation analysis for ecological state assessment of the coastal ecosystem of Black Sea. Osos, Kravtsova, Фронтасева, Зиняковская, Юшин, Бункова, Стукалова, Яковлев, Камнев. Encouraging prize. Physics research of the our group in the Atlas experiment at Large Hadron Collider, Бедняков, Олешкин, Чижов, Храмов, Гладилин, Любушкин, Кульчицкий, Плотникова, Терешко. Another second prize, peculiarity of nuclear reaction mechanism by weakly bound light nuclei. Lukyanov, Sobolev, Denikin, Maslov, Nauminko, Pinyanchkevich, Samarin, Skobelev, Kugler, Mrazek. Last encouraged prize, investigation of deeply subcritical target assembly quanta consisting of 512 kilogram natural uranium radiated by deuterons at energy range from 1 to 8 MeV at the nucleotron in our institute. The authors Furman, Gundorin, Adam, Baldin, Berlev, Solnishkin, Tutunika, Varanko, Zavorka, Chilap. So I can ask you, kindly ask you to approve the decision of our jury.
Thank you, Misha. We now again have Director Matveev announcing vacancies. Yes. Okay.
Dear colleagues, we have announced to make announcement of vacancies of positions of the Directorates of General Laboratories, and now after day yesterday, so I would like to say that based on the results of voting for the election of the director of the Bogolyubov Laboratory of Theoretical Physics, the Scientific Council should announce new elections for the position to be held at the next session of the Scientific Council in September at 2017. At the same time, I would like to say that directorate have to receive, let's say,
the goal from Scientific Council now to clarify these rules for elections of directorate of laboratories and as well elections. So not to have a possibility of, in a principle, possibility of such an outcome of election when there are, so we just facing this fact that election doesn't happen. So we have maybe to clarify this, these rules, and so to be any way to be sure that result has to be anyway. So how to do, I think Scientific Secretary, having an experience on that, we will work out that and suggest at the next session of Scientific Council, this rule, it has to be approved before we will start new elections. So then, Scientific Council should also announce the vacancies of positions of the director of the Frank Laboratory of Neutron Physics and of director of the Laboratory of Information Technologies, two very important laboratories and two very important so positions. So the election for these positions will take place on the 123rd session of Scientific Council in February of the next year. So I finished with that. So.
Thank you very much for these announcements. We are now ready, I think, to call a coffee break, but the editing board is now probably ready to start working, because we'll have the report from the editing board on for the general discussion. And then the general discussion after the coffee break will be preceded by a short discussion, hopefully, on the regulations which have been distributed. So with that, do we allow 25 minutes coffee break? Is that okay?
Yes, I think okay. Yes.
Okay, so we meet at 11:30 after the coffee break. Thank you, and then it'll be 11:30 sharp. Thank you.